Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Jason Barsky Show.
All right, with the two mass shootings over this past weekend, everyone's pointing fingers. This person's to blame. That person's to blame. That lifestyle is to blame. This politician's to blame. Violent video games, they're the downfall. If it's not them, it's going to be parents. They don't parent anymore. But, okay, let's step back there. I overstepped where I was going. I found a guy who's an expert and someone who has spent a lot of time in his career kind of debunking, if I'm saying this correctly, the myth or the theory that violent video games lead to violent behavior. And welcome to the show this morning. Good morning. Now, is it Dr. Chris Ferguson? Should I just call you Chris?
You can just call me Chris, and it's great to be on this morning. Thank you.
Well, hey, thank you. Thank you for joining me. Did I set that up right for you? Do you go out and try to debunk what you think is this myth, or how could I have set that up better?
Yeah. Well, I'm a psychology professor and a psychologist, and I've been studying the issue of violence in video games for the last 15 years. So, it's obviously a question that a lot of us are examining through psychological science and hopefully through, rigorous psychological science. And I think what we're coming to is, as the answer from that science is, that looking at the data from several different ways, we're really seeing that there does not seem to be evidence that playing violent video games is a contributing factor or a risk factor for things like mass shootings or violent crime or serious acts of aggression in society. So I guess in that sense, it is debunking kind of common beliefs that people have, but of course it's debunking it with the data and scientific data.
Sure. Is there, now you said, okay, so people who play violent video games, I mean, the games are more bloody than they ever have been. Some of the situations, geez, outside of the violence, I think if anything's going to affect people, sometimes the interactions between the characters in the games can probably be worse, I would think, for someone psychologically. You watch this, bad behavior between two characters and mouthing off to each other, and just, that would almost scare me more than the violence, because the violence, I think most people have a natural line they'll walk up to when they get angry and they won't mm-hmm. cross it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, some of the things people, even gamers, tend to complain about is not even so much like the interactions between characters in the games, but also just interactions between players, So sometimes, in a lot of the competitions that people have online that, people can get a little bit heated. And that's kind of normal. That's nothing unique to games, of course, or video games by any means. But you'll see, sometimes people get a little angry with some other features of games, So there's been some studies that suggest that the games are more frustrating. For instance, people can get a little, can get a little bit angry if they're not progressing in the game. And, that's not much different from, we know people who, throw the cards across the room when they lose at a game of cards and stuff like that. So there doesn't seem to be anything particularly unique about video games that's, causing people problems any more than anything else in the world is, at least.
Now, I share that belief, and I've never thought that playing a violent video game would make me want to act out and do anything, just as little as playing Madden football has never made me want to go out and try to try out for an NFL team. I've just never felt that way. And, you laugh. A lot of people go, you're not taking this seriously. I am taking it seriously. You mentioned about players talking to each other. Is it possible, though, and maybe this is what some of the people who say it's these video games. Do you think it's possible that it's not so much the game itself, but the isolation that these players put themselves into sometimes when they get lost in kind of an online world? Well, they'll go and they'll sit there and play 10 hours a day and have a headset on where they're talking to other players with the online gaming. They can talk to each other and they feel like they have a connection with other human beings, but they really don't. Do you think being alone and there's studies out there about prisoners in solitary confinement can mess up their head? It's kind of like solitary confinement, just a lot more, there's a lot more going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, the data we have now actually suggests that, people actually can get a lot of their social needs met through these kind of online connections with people that they're playing games with. And the reality is that in most cases, when kids are playing online with friends, it's usually friends they also have in real life. You know, it's their friends through school. It's the friends they are spending time with in real life. So the social connections people have online are kind of complicated, and they're interwoven with their real life social connections, as well. Now, granted, I mean, we want everything to be in moderation. So if someone's spending 10 hours a day on video games, like you said, then the concern we might have is, are they getting enough sleep? Are they getting enough exercise? Are they not doing their schoolwork? Are they not doing their work if they're a little bit older? So, like anything else, we'd want to make sure that gaming is kept in a balance with other life responsibilities and making sure people are socializing and getting their social needs met. But I think a lot of that is generational, too, that, older adults who don't use video games very much kind of want kids to socialize in a particular way. And a lot of that may be, lack of communication and misunderstanding about how socialization can happen within games.
What about, and I'm getting a bunch of text messages saying the same thing, asking the question about, but these games desensitize kids to violence. And if they are desensitized and they don't think violence is that big of a deal anymore, it's easier to go out and kill and be violent.
Yeah, we don't have evidence for that. So the first thing that's kind of interesting is that desensitization isn't necessarily a bad thing. All desensitization means that you're experiencing less and less of an emotional response to something that's repetitive. So we kind of think about first responders, right? When we have a serious injury and we call first responders to our house, we want them to be desensitized. They're not going to have a huge emotional reaction to seeing our blood, our injuries. And we want that because that means that the emotions are taken out of the picture and they're able to make reasonable cognitive decisions about what they need to do to get us the treatment we need. We don't want them to freak out and have all those anxiety and emotional responses. So desensitization isn't necessarily bad. I mean, I think what people are kind of talking to is this idea that, by watching violence over and over again, we just kind of get used to it. It doesn't really kind of have an impact on us, and that might, change our behavior in some way. And what we tend to find with media violence is that watching or playing lots of media violence tends to desensitize you to media violence. So if you really like horror movies, you may notice you need to get edgier and edgier, darker right. and darker horror movies to get the same sort of twist out of it. We don't really see evidence that transfers to real life. And we've done some studies, at Stetson that we kind of look at exposing people to television shows and then seeing how they respond empathically to victims of real violence and things like that. And we don't find that exposing people to violent media or people's past exposure to violent media makes them any less empathic.
Do you think it's real violence? What about this? It just popped into my head as you said, when they get desensitized, they don't have as much of an emotional response. Now, that emotional response, I think, sometimes may stop somebody from doing something they shouldn't do. For example, if I'm mad and in my head, I'm just I want to go, I'm going to kill him. And then I stop and go, no, hang on a second. I think about what I'm doing and I process all these different emotions. If you are desensitized, is it possible you may just go, I want to kill these people, and then you don't care? Not that you're going to do it, but are you taking down some of those walls that may stop you from bad behavior?
Yeah, that is entirely possible. I mean, one of the things you could think about is, of course, being in the public sphere, people get criticized. Politicians, media professionals, and those criticisms can be very wounding and hurtful at first, and they actually kind of make people question. Should I be a politician? Should I be a public professional, of whatever sort? And but eventually you get used to them.
Yeah.
To some extent, having less and less an emotional response to something actually can be good. It really just depends on the context. What are you responding to and what kind of emotional response are you having? It's really the desensitization is part of a lot of therapy. So, for instance, if you have a phobia, you may be too anxious to get on an airplane, or to pet a dog or whatever that phobia may be. But, through desensitization, through these kinds of trainings, through exposure, will get you to have less and less of an anxiety response to these things, which allows you to resume more normal, more desired behavior.
Would you say, okay, and let me see if this is the connection. This is what I'm taking from that, and if it's wrong, tell me. If somebody doesn't play video games but has sort of a violent demeanor, would that possibly mean you could use violent video games to help bring them kind of, like, make them more desensitized to it? Like, look, this, you get it out here. Get your anger out in this room. Almost like they, there's an area, there's a place in this area that has, it's like a stress room where you can go and you break things and get your anger out. Is there anything to that?
It might work sometimes. It's a theory called catharsis theory, and it's been controversial. And then, like, the popularity of that theory has kind of waxed and waned over time. So it was popular back in the early 20th century. It kind of fell out of favor in the later 20th century as people kind of focus more on human learning. And then it's starting to come back a little bit. There's some evidence, at least in some, like careful control context, that catharsis might work. Particularly if it's kind of like pre-planned and very careful. But what people sometimes mix that up with is more like stress reduction. So people sometimes talk about, like, I had a bad day and I came home and played a bunch of Call of Duty and then I felt better. That's not really catharsis. That's really more just sort of stress management or mood management, basically. And that does work. Engaging in a hobby, even if that hobby is violent video games, does work to de-stress people if you like playing those games. And that can be, that can be helpful. The other thing we do tend to find is that, and Patrick Markey at Villanova University has done a lot of this great work, but, we find that if you look like at the violent crime rate in society, that whenever very popular violent video games like Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto are released, there's an almost immediate decline in violence in society. And of course, what's happening there is that a lot of young men, who tend to be the group that commit most violent crimes, are occupying their time with these games, and that takes them off the street, gets them, takes them away from trouble. And so there is this kind of like causal link between games and crime being reduced, but it's probably nothing more mysterious than just keeping a bunch of young guys busy.
Yeah, honestly, that was one of my... I jokingly came up with an idea to stop Kim Jong-un in North Korea. It's like, he doesn't need to start wars. Just give the guy a PlayStation 4, and he'll be like, oh, this is great. I've always joked about that, and people are like, oh, you don't take it seriously. No, I do. I just feel like it's all he knows is pushing buttons and launching missiles and violence. And give him something else, maybe he'd see a different thing. You know, I know you have somewhere else you have to be in about 15 minutes, and I only have a few minutes left with you. Talking to Dr. Chris Ferguson, you're a professor of psychology. It's Stetson University, is that right? Or university, where are you at now?
Stetson. Yeah, Stetson University. It's right outside Orlando, Florida.
My question is this. Would you, if a parent has teenagers or, I have a 7-year-old, and I'll sometimes let him play some games that are a little more aggressive and will have, or violent, I'll just flat out say it, but I talk to him about it, and if I see he's getting way too into it, we stop and we talk. What advice would you give to parents when it comes to these games? I don't think you'll say, hey, give a 6-year-old a Grand Theft Auto game and, let him babysit himself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's no one-size-fits-all for families. So every family has to decide what's going to be right for them, what's right for their kids. Nobody knows your kid better than you do, hopefully. At the very least, in an ideal world, at least. So some of the advice I would say is, certainly play the games, and a lot of, older adult parents, grandparents are kind of like scared of video games if they didn't grow up with them or they're not used to them. But, get in there and play the games. You don't have to spend as much time as your kid does playing them, but, at least you get to know the games. You get to see if there's anything in the games that you really are worried about. That also gives you more credibility if you do decide to restrict a particular game. There's nothing worse, particularly for teenagers or preteens, than an out-of-touch parent, saying stuff that they heard on the news media, and that's all that they know about a particular, television show or game or whatever else. So get in there and play the games. Absolutely, like you were talking about, talk to your kids. I hear from a lot of adults, I don't even know why kids want to play these games. Well, did you ask your kid why they like these games? And have that conversation about what do they see in the games? What are they getting out of it? If there's some, edgier content they're uncomfortable with, the parent is uncomfortable with, how is the kid processing? They think about that content. Yep. And you may find that your kids are actually pretty, savvy about, a lot of this stuff. I mean, I have a 15-year-old son, myself, and our general rule was, you're basically okay with going one age category up, So in other words, if he was elementary school, PG-13 was fine, once he was like 13, and, some R-rated movies are okay. But, we always kind of screen everything in advance and, make sure there's nothing in there that, stuff what we were uncomfortable with. But that was what was right for us, and different families are going to have, a different approach, and that's okay.
And I think there have been a couple situations where they've pointed to shooters. I want to say Columbine was like this, where they were video game players and they played violent games. There have been connections, but is that more of one of those situations where it's more of a a contributing factor, but not a cause?
Or do you think it's not related? It's not related at all. It's just the fact that these are teenage boys, and all teenage boys play, you know, violent video games at least occasionally. Almost about 90%, right. You know, play violent video games at least occasionally. So you're finding out that, and of course, with these two recent shootings, we don't know it yet. This whole conversation is happening before we even know what kind of games they play. But, you know, we can assume they're in their early 20s. We can assume they probably played some action RPG games because almost all males in that age category play action. So it's sort of like saying they used to eat cereal or they wear sneakers sometimes, you know, and this is a contributing factor. It's just a random factor that you know, everybody in the age category does. And what happens is when people only pay attention to the video game issue when it's a young male, and they ignore the video game issue when the shooter is an older male, like the Las Vegas shooting from October 2017. It was a 60-some, you know, year-old male. The average age of a shooter is about 40. So they're not all young males. And there are some occasional women, like Amy Bishop, who shot up her biology department, you know, who are shooters as well. And nobody talks about video games, you know, for these cases that don't fit the narrative. And that allows people to have this, you know, sort of illusion of a correlation where a correlation doesn't exist. What we call confirmation bias. You just ignore the cases that sort of don't
fit. It feels so good to do that. Yeah. But everyone does. Everyone does it at times.
Absolutely.
There's all these questions coming. I could keep going asking these questions. I had what I thought was a good one, but, you know, and I'm probably called today on this, and I know you have other things you have to get to. Thank you for your time. I'll be honest, a lot of people are writing in, he's just a liberal professor. He's this, he's that, he's got it. That's the listeners. That's the listeners at WLK, and these are conversations we have back and forth. And so I wanted to just present you. You know, I don't know. I wonder what'll happen. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. Most people don't. I don't think many people realize just how big the video game industry is now. If violent video games, in my opinion, actually led to there was a direct link to violence, there would be shooters walking on the street everywhere. The entire country would be experiencing the violence that we see in Chicago, and we don't. So,
right, absolutely. And I think the important thing to point out there, too, is that if you look at violent crime rates in the United States, youth violence has actually declined by over 80% over the last 25 years. So a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think, like, kids today are the worst ever. The worst generation was my generation, the Generation X. You know, so the peak in violent crime was about 1993, and there's been this massive decline in violence in society since that time. Even mass shootings have stayed fairly stable. I mean, they get a lot of attention. That sort of makes it seem like they're happening more often than they perhaps are, but the actual prevalence of them has stayed fairly stable since roughly the 1970s.
Well, look, I'll let you get going to your next interview or class, or I'm not sure what you're doing the rest of the day, but that's really none of my business. I'm not going to bother. Dr. Chris Ferguson, professor of psychology, thank you for taking the time being on the show this morning.
Not a problem. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
From the WILK Studios, the Jason Barsky Show.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.